Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nanga Def. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
All righty, and let me go on with our promo for the day.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
With Dr. Debbie Green, and I'm Dr. Debbie Green, my wonderful co-host. That's Naima Latif, our executive producer. Wow, we have a wonderful lineup this morning and a great topic: how to prepare our children for life. Isn't that amazing? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it wasn't a manual. You know, it wasn't a book. I don't know about Dr. Spock, but I don't think he had everything. You know,
no, he
might have had a few things. How to rear a child, you know, in the early ages. But I don't think anyone really took the time to write a book on life, you know?
Yes.
You know, write a whole book. I'm not talking about just how to, you know, talk to your peers or your parents or, you know, balance a checkbook. But what about the perception of that person? How they look, their view on life, because the view on life changes everything.
Absolutely.
It changes everything. And so if you're looking through rose-colored glasses, then you may not see the bigger picture. picture. And, you know, but if you're looking from a perception of, okay, it is what it is, and how do I handle that? You know, how do I, you know, take charge of my emotions? How do I ponder my thought processes before making any sudden moves, any sudden choices or decisions? I think this is something that we should, you know, teach our children, because one thing we do know, we're not going to always be there to think for them or protect them.
Absolutely.
So we should start at an early age. And so I believe personally that you should start as early as 2 years old. 2 years old, teaching your children. Not just don't do that or don't do this, because we get the don't do's all the time. What are you going to say? Yes, do that.
Right. And we, even when we tell them don't do something, we never explain why. And so they really don't understand why not to do something. And that means us as parents taking the time to give them values and principles and understanding of a basic foundation that you have a responsibility to all the people that you share this planet with to do no harm. So not only am I protecting you as a parent from harming yourself, but I'm also protecting you from harming anyone else. So if I explain to you, don't do this, either it's going to harm you or it's going to harm someone else.
Correct. And I think, you know, we should give guidance and, you know, not so much advisement. And, you know, I say this, and hear me clearly when I say that, what will work for you may not work for your child.
Right.
And it's like, and the thing about it is, because every person has their own mindset, even though they, like I say, from the youngest to the oldest, it doesn't matter. And we as parents, we are past downers. You know what I mean by that?
Past downers.
We pass it down. Whatever we've learned, we pass down. And some of us, you know, are very mindful. Like, oh no, I went through this as a child. I don't want my child to suffer. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going, you know. And we say that, and sometimes we mean well, but sometimes it ends up happening anyway.
Yeah.
So what is the concept? I just want to give you a few concepts on the best rearing, because we raise corn, people.
You don't raise.
We raise
rear
corn,
your
rear
children,
right? So the best concepts on, you know, according to Dr. Deb, because I work and I, you know, my career is kind of surrounding with I see adolescents. I see adolescents at their worst.
Ooh.
I don't see them at their best.
Ooh.
So, which means that our job, where I, you know, where I work and where I reside, is to help them get to their best so that they won't keep getting to their worst, okay?
Mm.
So what we've learned, and I'm just giving you things that I've learned and been exposed to, that children with mental and emotional problems come from a rearing of dysfunction, okay?
Mm.
Of dysfunction. And you're like, well, no, I didn't do anything wrong to my child. He seemed really happy. They didn't complain. They didn't say this and they didn't say that. And you know, they make straight A's in school. But that doesn't mean your child is happy.
That's true. Doesn't mean they're balanced.
That's it, you know. I think from a parent's seat, we look, if the child is not complaining and doing what they're told, that the child is happy with life, that is. Well, I can tell you we know that's not true because we hear it all the time. Oh, little Johnny was such a straight A student. He, you know, he never had any issues. But then what happens by the time you get in the teenage years, he just turns into this whole other being and no one didn't know. How could they not have known that he had life issues? How could they not have known? Because one does not always pay attention. We're too busy looking from the outside and not looking from the inside. Something's wrong. We have latchkey children, especially now during the pandemic. Latchkey children are raising themselves. They're not being, they're like, you know, hey, they're not being reared. They're raising themselves, right? So, you know, as parents would say, well, I do the best I can. Absolutely. Absolutely. You do. I'm not complaining, y'all. I'm not bashing. All I'm saying is during these times that we really have to pay closer attention to our children's emotional and mental status. What is it really saying to you? Are you listening? Are you listening? Or are you rushing off to your jobs, to your workplace, doing whatever you're doing, being a stay-at-home mom, a stay-at-home dad? But are you listening from the inside out? That's what I want. That's what I'm. That's my biggest concern, because a lot of our children always say, nobody listens to me.
Yes.
Nobody hears me. Nobody understands me. You know.
Yes.
So what are they not saying? It's all in their movement. It's all in their perceptions. It's all in their views. So you need to, you know, sit down and ask your child, what's your view on life?
Ask, don't tell them what it should be. Ask them so that you see their point of view.
Correct.
We get so used to telling them, and we don't listen, and we don't let them express themselves. We're so busy trying to make them see things the way we decide they should see them instead of learning who they are. Because
absolutely,
each person is an individual, and your child is not you. They are a separate soul with their own experiences. And if you don't talk to them, you don't know what they've experienced every day that's shaping their belief system and shaping their feelings, their emotions, their self-concept. So we need to do much more listening, and listening without judgment. That's what we
absolutely
have to learn how to do.
That's the key factor right there, Naima.
Yes.
Without judgment. Because, again, these children are permeable. They're
yes
learning. They're moldable. They learn with their sensory organs, their sensory part of their brains,
mm-hmm,
and they learn by osmosis. So guess what? We were children too, right?
Yes.
That's how we picked up all the habits, bad, good, or indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were, and that's what they is. And do you know that the human mind will stay in an inner child's mind if it's not careful? And I want to talk about that a little later on in the show.
Inner child.
I want to really specify that the learning technique of a child's mind between the ages of, let's just take the first stage, you know, from, you know, birth, the baby, you know, the infant, all the way up to 5 years old is constantly recording everything. Everything is being recorded. And the thing, and it's being recorded subconsciously. That's the beautiful thing about it. So, you know, our environment that we have our children growing up in is extremely important. You know, we cannot think that they don't sense things, because they do.
They
sense things all the time, because they have this wonderful thing called intuition. And that intuition is, we're born with it. We're not, and we don't have to, you know, ask somebody for the permission to feel or to sense a certain thing. They'll know when you're upset. They'll know when you're mad. They'll know when you're sad. So a lot of times we want to protect our children. Oh, I don't want little Johnny to know how me and his father fight all the time. So we'll go in the room and we'll close the door thinking that he won't know.
Yeah, he can hear it, and he's distressed about it because
yeah
you're not talking about it.
Right.
And then if you're also angry at each other and not speaking to each other, he can feel the tension in the air, which is also distressing because he knows something's wrong and you won't talk about it.
Right, right. So the first thing I want to take a stab at is the mental status of our children.
Mm.
And the mental status of our children right now are very in an uproar, I just must tell you, because since the last 2 years, they've been dealing with major changes in school and, most of all, you know, major changes in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about it. When you take a child out of this environment normally, everything changes.
Everything.
Their attitudes change. Their,
mm-hmm,
their processes change.
Yeah.
How they're processing life. And
yeah,
and you want them, you know, a lot of times they say, no, you're going to do this. And You know, we don't take that in always in consideration. Or what about they're not happy? Because they're not, so you know. They're none of them happy right now. Everybody is shifting and changing. They went down from 2020 to be a shutdown, out of school, you know, usually talking to their friends or whatever to no stimuli.
Yeah. That's their whole social life, school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So when you take that away for a good period of time, you expect something to change in your child, okay? Emotions start to uproar. We call it emotionally hijacked. Everything is hypersensitive. And, you know, so you have to help them to deal with their mental status. And, again, you ask them, you know, are you okay? Stop asking what's wrong. When I tell parents that stuff, if you keep asking what's wrong, that's all they're going to do is focus on what's wrong.
Right.
Ask them, you know, what's right today? You know, are you okay? You know, how can I help you feel better? You know, even whatever it is, just don't assume that they can get through it themselves.
Right.
And, you know, I think an active listener is the best thing you can do for your children.
Yeah.
You know, actively listen to them and give them the opportunity to tell you what's on their mind. And as you actively listen, you will notice if you do this on a regular, on consistency, you will find out that your children will open up more to you. I don't care if they're 3, 4, 5 years old. They will. You say, hey, you know, just make yourself emotionally available.
Yeah.
Just be available to them. Because this shifting in things is not easy. They find this very hard. Because think about, look at all of the changes that has happened just in the last 2 years, and we're still there. Isn't that amazing? So at some point, at some decency, we know we have to try to get life back in order enough so that we can continue to live a productive life. So the children also need to live a productive life. And, you know, they need to know how to deal with hardship, okay? Hardship is one of those things that most people run away from. They deny, you know, they avoid, you know. So if you're avoiding hardship, guess who else is avoiding it? Your children.
Right.
How they, and that is something that's not very healthy to totally avoid hardship, because it's going to come at when you least expect it, so you might as well get ready for it.
Mm.
And self-master. That means you take a period of time to deal with whatever hardships that may come. Difficulty is always in a place where most people are not looking.
Mm. You know what I notice when parents are going through stress, they expect their children to not be going through stress, and then they get angry at the children if the children are expressing the way a child expresses being under stress. So like you speak about, you know, this is a difficult time for them. So a parent who might be a bit upset because maybe they were laid off at their job, or maybe have to work from home in a different kind of way, or maybe there's more work put on them because other employees had to be downsized, and so they're upset. And so they're snappy, and they're aggravated, and they're short-tempered. But then when their children are exhibiting the same behavior, they want to punish the children for having the same feelings that they feel as an adult. So what is the child supposed to do when the child is upset? They're going to also be short-tempered, aggravated, not themselves, because they're upset. And we tend to not be sensitive to the fact that however they're acting out of their stress just like we're acting out. But we don't have anybody to reprimand us because we're adults. So we want to reprimand them. We want to punish them. We want to be angry at them. You know, can't you see I'm upset? Get somewhere and sit down. Well, why are we expecting them to have normal behavior in an abnormal situation when our behavior is not normal in an abnormal situation? So we need a whole lot more sensitivity to the fact that young people have to process this and feel out of control. And that's what's distressing, when you don't have control over your situation. At least we as adults have a little more control over how we're going to decide how to do things. Children just get told, look, this is how it is, that's it. I mean, the teachers in Chicago yesterday, they decided, well, you know, we're not going to go to the classroom. We'll have to just do remote viewing, remote teaching because we don't think it's safe. Okay, so you made that decision as an adult teacher. And what does that do to the children? That means they have to stay home. That means their parents have to figure out how to stay home with them if they're not of age they can be by themselves, which many are not. So that's
right.
Everybody's life disrupted. And did anybody consult with the child and say, how is this going to affect you when you were all set to go and see your friends again and interact again? And maybe that school lunch was the only meal you were going to get for the day because your parents don't have time to cook because they work. I mean, how is that affecting you? No one asked. They just decided, well, we, the teachers, we're not going to go to school because we don't think it's safe. So that's everybody's affected by that. But we're expecting the children to act like everything's okay and to be calm and collected and not show that they're upset, and then we punish them when they show that they're upset.
Right. And, again, you know, it's adaptability. You know, you have to teach your children how to adapt with love. You know, you teach them out of love. But you teach them how to adapt with love, which is, you know, clearly saying maybe a statement such as this. I know this is not easy for you, you know, and I understand that you are trying to do the best you can in this given situation, but we're going to make it together. I mean, and you know, and you join, you help them to process that they're not alone in the situation.
That's
instead
important.
Of just, you know, giving them the directive, like go to school, make good grades, do this, go virtual. I mean, you know, it's a lot of stern movement.
Yes.
But then I think not enough fluidity, flexibility for the kids. And then when they start to decline or deteriorate mentally, then you ask, you know, what's wrong?
Yes.
No, that was wrong if you were watching closely, you could clearly see that there was a breach, and that's what I call it, a breach mentally, a breach emotionally. Something started long time ago, and sometimes we don't always pay attention. We don't pay attention to when a child does not feel loved. I'll tell you something, Naira, for sure. When children don't feel loved, they never tell their parents.
Ooh. How can you say that? How do you even know how to say that to a child? I don't feel loved. How's a 7-year-old going to say that?
They tell their parents, I don't feel like you love me. It may come out not in those words.
But in a, they will show you.
It may come out in action.
Yes.
It may come up, but they don't come out and say, you don't love me. They may say, oh, you're not listening. You don't understand.
You always hollering at me.
Right, but you very seldom hear a child come and say, you don't love me,
yes.
Or you don't know how to
I
love
feel
me.
Like you don't love me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, How? But that's really what a child is saying, and sometimes they act out because they're saying, pay attention to me, I'm upset.
Right, so the anger comes out, the discontentment comes out, you know, the uneasiness, frustration, they come out and they cover up for that pain. You see what I'm saying? And if they stay in that mindset too long, what happens is they start to feel other things and go other places. And
yeah.
We've heard this before, looking for love in all the wrong places, right?
That's where it starts, yeah.
You know, looking for love in all the wrong places, then they start looking at it in really and truly defective and dysfunctional relationships.
Yes.
Because you got to remember, if they're feeling dysfunction, that's all they're going to do is gravitate to dysfunction, right?
Absolutely.
So here comes, you know, starting at age 12, then going into the age 15,
mm-hmm.
going into 18. Okay, they're still dysfunctional, so they end up having dysfunctional lives. And you say, well, wait a minute, there's not no perfect life. You're absolutely correct. But I think your child should know when they are in a dysfunctional state. And the thing, and you should help them. And if you have some dysfunctional issues about yourself, be honest enough and say, you know what? Okay, I failed at that. Okay, and I don't want you to get into a grief-stricken, not grief-stricken or guilty, That's not what I'm saying. Just adjust. We have to learn how to adjust and not feel sorry for ourselves, because, again, the children are not getting the answers if you feel you're not a good mother or you're not a good dad and you keep thinking that way, then there's a good chance that you're not going to do what's best for the child.
Yeah.
And, again, you know, they're just looking for guidance in some aspect of guidance. Guidance of, okay, what should I do? Who's going to listen to me? Do I matter, you know, in this thing called life? And they absolutely do.
Right. Well, you know what is probably unfair that we do to our children? We don't give them a vision of what a functional life looks like growing up. And, I mean, you look at all the fairy tales we hear, you know, and the prince married the princess and they lived happily ever after. And that's always the end of the story. They got married and lived happily ever after. So what does happily ever after look like? You know, I think we have to, as you said, we have to give our children some standards, some principles, some values, something to base their perception of what a balanced, functional life looks like. It's when you're not hurting and other people are not hurting by your actions, when you are at peace, when you're content, when you're able to cooperate, when you're able to express yourself and feel that you're not going to be attacked, you're going to be understood and loved and appreciated. They need to see what that looks like. And
right. It's
difficult in a family where there is conflict to show what that looks like. Now, that's not to say that you're never going to have an argument if you are in a relationship and you all disagree, but you have to be able to show a child what disagreement and resolving a disagreement looks like. There's so many families where they argue and fight and fuss and disagree and then split. So,
right. You
know, how does a child learn conflict resolution when the only resolution they see is the ending of the relationship?
Correct.
And when children are in families where the two people could not resolve the relationship, and all through that time the child is feeling the apprehension of my parents may split, our family may break apart. Children feel that, and that's distressing. And then if it does happen, most of the time the parents are too emotional and too dysfunctional to focus on the child's distress about it and talk to the child ahead of time about it, or even tell them, well, it looks like we're not going to be able to resolve our conflict, but this is what we're going to do. We're going to make sure we both are supportive of you. Too many times the parents are too angry at each other to even be functional in that. They're wanting the child to take sides, or one person wants to make the other person suffer. And so children today, and I saw this over and over and over again as a teacher, so many of the children, their emotional distress came right out of the fact that their household was in conflict and they
Correct.
Felt powerless to do anything about it. And they just had to live with the anger and the conflict and then the eventual split, and then maybe somebody else got another partner, maybe somebody else started another relationship. So they got to deal with being the stepchild or the child that felt that they were unwanted or rejected or neglected. And seeing them bring all of that into the classroom, and it manifests as their disruption, because it was like, I need somebody to pay attention to me. I need somebody to listen to me. I need somebody to care about how I'm feeling.
Right.
And most of the time, teachers are not equipped to deal with a child's emotional distress and recognize it for what it is. And so all the child gets is punishment for expressing emotional distress. So this is a pattern that we see and that we have created as adults by not listening to our children and letting them tell us how life is affecting them, how our lives are affecting them, how the household is affecting them. We need to be able to listen without judgment, without defensiveness, so that we can understand what we're creating for them. And when we can empower them by listening to them, then we can help them to face life and
Absolutely. Feel
that they can be empowered to make decisions that are going to make a difference in their lives. So we got to take a break, and then we got a caller. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live, we want you to participate. Type in your comments. If you're listening on the switchboard, press 1 when you have a comment. We've got a caller at 773-487. We'll come to you after the break. You are listening to and watching Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green here on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. And we'll be right back. Stay with us.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibrations. Shalom.
About how to prepare your children for life And, you know, one of the things that we often don't talk about is what do we tell them from puberty to the time they leave our home, what to expect? How did you do that? Tell us about your situation as a parent and what you taught your children from the state they are now, carrying them from.
You said during the pandemic?
Yes, yes, especially during this pandemic, because this has been hard.
You know, I asked my daughter, I said, you know, first I tell her.
Can you give us a name for those who recognize your illustrious and
Coopy from Chicago.
And your background in terms of your parenting?
Yeah, I do a different type of parenting. I was blessed to have twins, a boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew when I first saw them, I go, I'm going to have to be a special father here because I have a male and a female. And I look back at how I was raised. I was raised in a spiritual environment where we had to read the word. I was in choir, little 3-, 4-, 5-year-old child singing in the choir. So I was raised within a spiritual environment where we didn't have a lot of arguing. We sat at the dinner table and ate. We had to pray for our food. And so when I brought my children up, I always prayed with them. Anytime they asked me for something, Daddy, I want this game. I go, come here and say a prayer. Why do we got to say a prayer? I said, well, God is supplying all of our needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling my daughter yesterday, you know, you can do all things through Christ. I instill in them what was instilled in me as a child growing up. I'm keeping them in a spiritual atmosphere away from all of this drama. I'm not affected, and she's not affected by it. I even asked her, I said, you know what's going on? She goes, yeah, Daddy, everybody's acting phony. This is a phony pandemic. I go, you got it. You got it. You see it too, don't you? She said, yeah, I'm not worried about it. I'm not letting that affect me. And I told her the best life that she can have is continue her spiritual journey and her quest, her connection with the universe and the creator.
Right.
You see? And she's not going to have those bumpy roads dealing with people all the time. You know, and she says, Daddy, because I'm a spiritual woman, I attract a lot of people to me. I go, that's good.
How old is she now?
Draw people. She's 16.
15?
They're both 16.
Ooh.
They're juniors. Yeah, she's an honor class right now, honor student. And when I talk with her, I share the word. I minister with her. She's very, you know, she sings and we sing together. I keep it high frequency. I keep our relationship on another level. And I tell her, I said, it says, be in the world, but not of it. I tell her that all the time. Don't be of this world. You could be in it, but don't be of it. You see? And parents should really, that's the kind of relationship that you're supposed to have because once they get older, I told her, I'm raising you so you can teach me something. I didn't have you just to have you. I want to learn from you. You know?
Right.
You got to instill that. You got to instill that spirituality in your children or you're going to have issues. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then my daughter thinks for herself. She thinks for herself. She's very strong-minded. She has a strong character, just like her daddy. And she's still, nothing affects her a lot. And if it does, she tells me straight up. We are real with each other. She said, Daddy, I don't like this, what you just said. What you mean by that? You see? I let her talk to me like that.
That's important.
If I say something, I let her talk to me. Because we have a relationship. Even though I'm the parent or the father, I'm not over you. I'm trying to get a relationship with you, established with you. Because I want to be a supporter of your greatness. I'm here as not just as a parent, I'm as a supporter for your greatness. I want to see you do great things. And every time you do something good, I'm going to applaud it. I'm going to, you know, give you a high five. I'm going to hug you because I want you to do great things. You know, she said one time, she said, "Daddy, I'm gonna be greater than you." I said, "Don't do that." She said, "Why?" I said, "You want to be greater than me? Go have twins." You know, okay, she laughed. I said, "No, you're gonna do what you it's your life." And I let them know, you know, I'm watching greatness. And I said, your parents, your ancestors created Rust College in Mississippi, the HBCU University. She goes, "We did?" I said, "Yeah." I showed her the picture of her great-grandmother and her great-grandfather. And you know what she said? "That means I'm a teacher." I go, "Bam, you got it. You got
wow.
it." Yeah. So, you know, don't look at, you know, I know a lot of children go through a lot of hard times. I tell my daughter all the time, "You're so lucky to have a father and a mother in your life that loves you." And I asked her, how many of your friends have fathers? She goes, "None." I go, "You see how you're lucky?" Yep. Now, I don't abuse others who don't have that, you know, but bottom line, before I stop talking, establish a spiritual relationship with your children, and you will experience harmonious experiences because God is carrying both of you all. You're putting God first, you know, because you can deal with the worldly issues. You can deal with all that. But when you're in God's covering, it seems like God makes you he puts a wall around a lot of that drama that's going on out here. You know, I go out every day, and I tell people, man, y'all, after 2 years, y'all don't know what's going on? After 5 shots, y'all don't know what's going on? What's it going to take you after 10 shots? You don't see what's going on? Come on.
Yeah,
and they be laughing at me. I go, "Come on, man. What they got, 5 shots now? We on 5 shots right now." they didn't create all kind of names.
Oh yeah.
You know, I told
but
them,
you know,
it's going to be
your
east, it's going to be the Easter. Let me say that. I'm stop talking. I'll listen to you guys. They're coming up with the Easter Bunny variant in March. It's going to be Easter Bunny shot in March. That's what I tell people.
Oh.
Look out for that one.
that's really what you're doing with your daughter, though, is giving her a sense of calmness that, you know, no matter what's happening in the world, you're going to be okay because you have the power to create your own life. And, you know, and thank you so much for calling. That was Kofi from Chicago. And, you know, we really do need to have fathers be a strong influence in the lives of their children and daughters in particular. Because and I was reading in Michelle Obama's book where she talked about the fact that she had men in her life that affirmed her, that as he said, you know, listened to her and made her feel valuable, her father, her brother. And so she was a strong woman because of strong men in her life that
uh-huh.
made her feel as if her voice mattered. And that's critical for women to have men around them that constantly affirm that they are valuable, their thoughts are valuable, their feelings are valuable, their aspirations are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult when you live in a society that represses women or makes you feel like, you know, just set up, sit down, stay in the back, say nothing, you know, you're nobody. It's
right.
difficult to come out of that. You can, but it's difficult because of the collective mindset of the other women around you that might not be encouraging. So this is kind of a challenge that we have, a global challenge that we have as women, to change some of the attitudes that we have been indoctrinated with that makes us feel like we're lesser than or lesser value or of lesser importance, our feelings don't matter. Anytime you're raised in an environment where you're given the thought that your feelings don't matter, you're being set up to be abused and to accept abuse because you're being silenced, you're being gagged, you're being made to feel like you shouldn't speak. And whatever you're feeling, whatever pain you're going through, Don't say anything about it. Don't upset other people by letting them know that you're upset. Just keep it to yourself. That's not good, and that's not empowering. So if you have a female child, and I'm glad that he has a male and a female, because, you know, that's one of the things that parents get to see. I remember looking at an episode of Blackish where the daughter was saying, you treat me differently than my brother. You know, they have twin boys and girls. But it's important in these times that we remove the indoctrination that has been in so many of our cultures that female children don't matter and that their role is to just wait for a man to give them validity, you know. That's not what we want to be teaching this generation. We want to be teaching them a healthy partnership. And that's why we have to demonstrate that in our homes. What does a healthy partnership look like, where two people are working together for your well-being and you are important, and both of us, male and female, father and mother, both of us love you and care enough to support and encourage you. That's what children need to see.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, as we have some Facebook that join us, Sister Queen Vieta Robinson, Grand Rising, beautiful queen, divorce is a good opportunity to demonstrate resolving problems. I absolutely agree with that, and we also want to greet Tasha Salvage. Good morning, Queen. Good morning. Thank you for joining us, as well as Carla Berry. Good morning. Good morning.
Thank
you for joining us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very important that you do have a spiritual base. I think, again, we have those four components is, you know, your mental, your emotion, your spiritual, and your environment really molds a child. And you can't leave one of those components astray. You can't leave it out of it, because when you lead a child back to a spiritual component, it helps them to identify the self.
Yeah.
That's what it does.
Yeah.
You know, the Godhead is placed in place where it should be, and it gives that individual to a moment of what they call soulless, which I acknowledge me.
Mm-hmm.
I acknowledge me that I'm not greater than anything, you know, like better than anyone else, but I am a presence.
I am as great as everyone.
Exactly. And that's a wonderful thing, Kofi, to teach your children to acknowledge them for life, because otherwise, they only think on the outside of themselves. They don't think on the inside. Everything is moved by what they see, what they hear, and they don't make a what they call a proactive thought process based upon what their needs and what their wants is first before making it for someone else.
Right. We got another caller.
Absolutely.
Let's take area code 425-520. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thoughts on preparing your children for life. What's been your experience?
L.A., Central Florida.
Ah, L.A.
I don't have any children, but if I did, I would, and what Kofi put out there, I agree with that. You need that spiritual base. But in my opinion, on a critical mass basis for black folks in the United States, we got that down. On a critical mass basis, we got that down. This is in LA's opinion. I think what's missing, and once again, if I had children, the three things I would drill in their head would be, number one, understand and master inflation. I think that's a topic that's rarely ever discussed in households, be it black, white, or whatever. And the reason why I say that is if you don't understand inflation, your finances will just be in disrepair. You'll always be figuring out how to make more money, how to maybe I can join Amway or Mary Kay, and or maybe I can go to school and get this degree and that degree. And after you do all that, you're still struggling. And that's because most people don't, they don't understand inflation. And I'm sure many people in this audience has known somebody that they grew up with, could be a close relative or whatever, that has lost their home due to foreclosure or whatever because they didn't understand inflation. The second thing I would put into their heads is, and you can get this on the internet, it's only a minute long, but if, look up Akon, the singer, A-K-O-N, that's how you spell his name, Akon's 10% rule. And Akon's 10% rule is this. If something costs, well, I'll give an example. If he wanted to buy, or if you wanted to buy a house for $100,000, if you don't have $1 million in the bank, because 10% of $1 million is 100, then don't touch it. So most people, most Americans, regardless of color, regardless of zip code, including the ones that live on Rodale Drive out in California and Beverly Hills and Bel Air and those places, and Lakeshore Drive up in Chicago, most Americans on a critical mass basis are broke because they had to go borrow. So when you borrow money and you borrow for like long terms of time, 20 years and 30 years out, and you haven't factored in inflation, your marriage is on a train wreck.
Couples stand financial distress without splitting apart, where you know they can't weather the storm together?
Well, if you have the a lot of people, you know, of every religion, you know, they pray and do this, that, or the other, but we got to put feet to those prayers. So that's why, the feet to the prayer is understanding inflation and Akon's rule. There's some other things, but I think those are two fundamental things that, that we like I said, how many discussions do we have on inflation? We have more discussions on reparations than inflation. So let's say we all get cut a check for $10 million. You know, what's going to happen to it? I'm going to close out. I'm going to land my plane on this. In my family, okay, I'm dealing with two houses right now in Louisiana that are ancestral houses. Now, I got a cousin to help me out with that. The homes have probably been in the family for like maybe close to 100 years, if not 100 years. But, you know, we got to pay those property taxes. If we don't, they're gone.
The house, yeah.
And then on a larger scale within the same family where there's a lot more other relatives, blood relatives involved, we got 88 acres. Now, if we would just develop just a teeny-weeny part of that 88 acres, and 88 acres is like 88 football fields, we would all be set for life. Now, I'm just talking about within L.A.'s wide circle biological blood family. But I'm not trying to get no reparations check because we already got it. But for some reason, I mean, during my mother's generation and her siblings, and there were seven of them, all of them, my mother was the last one to go out of them. For some reason, they could never get together and say, what are we going to do with even 5 acres of this 88 acres? So the last thing is estate planning. Estate planning is teach your children how to think 10, 20, 100 years into the future, and then what are you going to do today so you won't be caught with your pants down 10, 20, 100 years from now? Because there's a lot of people right now that are struggling with property taxes on the ancestral house.
Yeah.
And they just don't know how to do it. So I'll land my plane there.
Yeah, well, you know, L.A., you've talked a lot about people learning how to do the things that they have had to borrow money to pay for, such as a home. You know, if you know how to build your own home, then that's a mortgage. That's a 30-year mortgage you don't even have to worry about. If you have the skill to build a house like we used to have, or to repair your home instead of having to get a loan to pay a contractor when you need a new roof. I mean, it's all these things. And you've talked before about how when families are able to pass down skills and abilities that are life skills, and I think that's one of the things that's often missing, life skills. You know, how do you do little things like, you know, repair a hem on a dress or sew a button on so that you don't have to buy a whole new set of clothing, you know. I mean, yeah. It's little things, and I think a lot of the life skills that we used to teach our children, we just don't teach anymore because we don't have time, because we're working for someone else. And I think now with this pandemic, if you have skills and you're spending more time in your house, now's the time to teach what you know that maybe this generation hasn't learned. You know, how do you hang a door back on its hinges when it's fallen off? Or how do you make bread from scratch out of flour? I mean, little things that can make a big difference when it comes to saving some money. So it's survival skills that we're never going to get taught in school that have to come from the house. And that's why I think this time of lockdown is probably one of the best things that can help parents assess what skills am I teaching my child that's mm-hmm. going to prepare them for life and help them be able to build a life with someone else. And I think also one of the reasons why couples break apart is because either one or both of them hasn't been taught life skills. And so you're in a situation with somebody who maybe they have no clue as to how to manage their finances, or, you know, no clue on how to, you know, put oil in the car, you know, no clue on how to do some basic survival and maintenance things. And because maybe they had either a parent who didn't have time to teach, or maybe they had absent parents, parents who were working all the time, nobody thought to teach the child these things. And so you get in a partnership, and a crisis comes, and your partner's useless because they don't have any skills, and you don't have the patience to deal with that. So a lot of times, that's one of the reasons why marriages break apart, is because someone doesn't have the life skills to be a supportive partner when a crisis comes, and you need to be able to work together and work through it. And
Absolutely.
You have to look at now.
Yeah, and you teach your children what they call self-independence and self-discipline, because when a child can make an independent choice that is healthy, that's the best thing you can teach your child, because once they understand the concept of being totally responsible for themselves, then it's easier for them to deal with life. It's hard when they don't accept their responsibility to themselves, obligation to themselves. I think a child should be taught your basic, you know, like making basic decisions as early as 3 or 4 years old. And it could be something so simple as, you know, okay, I expect you to fulfill these tasks. When you write the tasks down, you put them someplace where they can see them, and you check them off. And it's no more, I'm not saying to give them a list of 10 or 15 tasks. No, it depends on the child's ability to make these things happen. So if you're dealing with a five-year-old, for example, they should have, like, maybe 4 tasks to do. And those tasks should go throughout the week, such as picking up clothes, making sure that their living area, like their bed, is made. And, I mean, you can teach a child as early as 3 to 5 years old how to take care of itself. And at the end of that week, what you do, you give what is called an allowance. Mm-hmm. An allowance, $5, and you tell that child, okay, because you made up your bed, because you picked up your clothes, because you put your shoes in the right order, and everything is not all over the place, and you did it well, And I want to let you know I appreciate you. I pray you say it just like that. I appreciate you for doing this for yourself. That shows mommy, daddy, or whatever, that you are willing to be an independent person. And for that, here's your $5. But I'm going to tell you, out of this $5, I need at least 10%. And I'm going to get you a piggy bank.
I want you
to put 10% of that $5 in that piggy bank every time you do your task and you complete them. And then at the end of the week, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the week, you know, I am going to, you know, take you someplace, you know, in the week, every 2 weeks, however it's best for you to do it, take you someplace you really would like to go, Chuck E. Cheese, I don't know, wherever they would like to go, and you give that to them, not out of their savings, okay, but just out of the goodness that they did that. You will be surprised with a consistent flow of teaching your children just something so simple. That teaches them how to deal with money, that teaches them how to be responsible, and also to make mindful choices on their life, you know?
Yes.
And that, I think it's an ongoing thing that we should do that. So we got to take another break, right?
Right, right. We'll be right back. So if you're watching on Facebook on Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie, feel free to write in your comments. We'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. If you're on our switchboard and you have a thought you'd like to share, feel free to press 1. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And we will be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Generally, there is a disturbance in the home life.
generally the parents are not in a state of harmony, and generally there is a divorce or separation that has happened. That's what I've observed, but I don't know if that's what your experience has been when you deal with, as you said, some of the worst cases of adolescent behavior. Have you found that there's a direct correlation between conflict in the home and the behavior of the child?
Absolutely. And yes, divorce is one of those areas, but also addiction.
Mm.
Parents may have addiction, criminality. A parent may be incarcerated.
Mm.
And also adoption situations,
mm-hmm.
like when another family will adopt a child, and I see the correlation between children that are adopted have formed also mental illnesses as well.
Now, is it because of what they experienced before the adoption or their feelings about the adoption, my parents didn't want me, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, it does play a factor in that, but what happens is most of the time, depending on the adoption agency, the individuals who are adopting that child, whether from birth or whatever the case may be, really don't know a lot about their biological parents.
Oh, yeah.
And the biological parents might have had addictions, mental illness, or something, you know, dysfunctional. They don't find out about what was transferred with the child until the child becomes a certain age. And it's usually around, you know, grade school age, anywhere between 12 and,
yeah,
you know, 15.
Right. Puberty.
You will start seeing,
yeah.
Whatever's wrong, it's going to come out during that stage. And we're just talking about adopted parents or, you know, foster children or whatever the case is, they want their children they figure, okay, if I get this child at, you know, birth, I can, you know, rear this child to be a balanced child or a child that doesn't have any issues or, you know, no major issues that they can't help them with or whatever the case is, but that's not always the case.
Mm.
Because, again, if there is a genetic factor of mental illness, one does not know that until a child becomes of a certain age.
Mm.
So then that becomes a great challenge for those parents to try to figure out quickly with professional help how to help this child have a productive life. And if there is any dysfunctions in those adopted parents in their environment, it just adds to whatever conflicts there already is there. So we see that that's one of the factors of how children have mental illness, as well as, again, you know, dealing with parents that have addictions and parents that abandonment is another one, where one of the parents will abandon the family, you know, would leave, and it doesn't matter if it's a mother or father, and leave the children or whoever is left. We see that the feeling of unloved, unbelong, unaccepted, and the child feels, what's wrong with me? You know, if they stay in that mindset of feeling, you know, separated or thrown away, as one would say, if they stay in that mindset, they grow up that way. They're always trying to satisfy another human being as much as possible, and they're very clean. They have separation anxiety, which is a form of mental illness when it's severe, separation anxiety, where people become very codependent on whoever it is in a relationship, you know, rather is the existing parent or with a brother or sister, if a sibling is available, they may be, you know, codependent on the sibling, or even in outside relationships with peers, being codependent with peers. And again, the factors change when the environment changes. Like, for example, if one of the parents are dysfunctional and don't love the child and say things like, you know, you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, or something, you know, saying derogatory things to that child, the child will grow up thinking this, of course, and finding ways to, you know, try to satisfy other people, and then it doesn't happen. You know, they get hurt, then they get angry, then they get grudgeful. There's so many different factors, Naomi, that will cause a child to get imbalanced. But the main factors are divorce, genetics, you know, addictions. These are three of the main factors of how dysfunctions will cause children in families. And again, parents don't prepare children for divorces.
They don't. They don't know how. And what I've observed is that parents get so wrapped up in wanting to prove that their side is the right side, that rather than dealing with the emotional health of the child and the emotional distress of the child, they're intent on winning. You know, I want you to know that I'm right and the other party is wrong. And here's this child caught in between this tug of war between two people who haven't been able to resolve their conflict. And what I've observed even with children is their attitude is like, how can you tell me what to do? You don't even have enough sense to fix your relationship. You can't even get along. How do you have the moral authority then to tell me what's right and wrong? And that's when I see the rebellion happen. It's kind of like, you couldn't fix our family, so you can't tell me anything now. And that's when they start to, what I've observed is they start to act out because of their anger. And something that Viola said earlier about divorce is an opportunity for parents to show conflict resolution. If they have the maturity, they will do that because they can help a child get through a divorce. It's always going to be distressing, but they can help a child get through a divorce without a lot of the emotional scarring that happens when parents are battling it out and trying to make the child choose their side over the other parent's side, and they're, you know, bad-mouthing the other parent and all of that because they're not mature enough to realize this is a very distressing thing for our child. But we have a responsibility to them to not hurt them in this process of our choosing to go our separate ways with our lives, because they're still, that child is still a part of us. And unfortunately, too many people don't have the maturity to be able to handle a divorce amicably. But one thing I think helps, and this again is part of helping your child to choose a life partner in the right way. If you have as your foundation a solid friendship where there is mutual respect, even if for whatever reason you choose to go your separate ways, maybe, you know, something in your life has changed, maybe something in your ambition has changed, or your habits have changed, or whatever the case may be, or maybe you're struggling with an addiction and that other person just can't hang in there with you because, you know, you're too disruptive and you need to be by yourself so you can heal, whatever the case may be. But if you had as the foundation of your relationship a solid friendship, then you can talk to each other. Then you can part amicably. Then you can talk to your children about it. You can help your children get through it, even though it's going to still distress them. But it distresses them more when they see you attacking each other because they love you both. Even if one of you might be, you know, a chronic alcoholic or a drug addict or chronically in and out of jail because they got emotional issues or whatever the case may be, bad friends, whatever the case may be, but your children will always love you anyway. So to have one parent attack the other, it's very distressing to them. And you know, it's not about, well, I want them to know that I'm right. You know, I don't want them to blame me for the divorce. I want them to see that I had to do this, and this other person, they don't have themselves together. And you don't need to prove to your children that you were right in making that decision by tearing down the other parent. Just
absolutely
help them through it and help them know that you both still love them, but you're no longer walking on the same path. You need to split so that you can both grow separately, but you both still love them. You got to be mature enough to give them that message. If you're stuck I want to win, I want them to be on my side, you end up destroying the child.
Yes. Well, welcome. Thank you so much, George Singer, that got on, and her thoughts were on Facebook Live. I believe the first step for parents to do is to be willing to shift to the reality that your world is turning upside down, falling apart, and you cannot hold your changing world by yourself keeping it. Grow to be open to receive help in accepting the change. Everybody is affected. It is not just the children alone.
That's true.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's the truth be told.
Yes.
That's the truth be told. And again, proactive living, something we actually were talking about last Thursday, is it really can solve a lot of these problems when one is proactive. Proactive is like, you know, it's getting ahead of yourself to prepare, you know, and because it's one of those things that life is going to happen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing we can do to stop life from happening because it is an ongoing train. We have to ride the train. Every now and then the train will jump track, but guess what? It's going to keep on going, right?
Yeah.
So that's the goal is to, again, you know, help them to help themselves. And as we are still learning, as we are still growing as parents, as adults, you know, we learn with our children. You know, children are very resilient. They are, you know, they know more than what we think they know, because the children that are in this season time, in this lifetime that we're in now, are very what they call aware. You know, they're very aware. Down from the youngest ages of 2 years old, you'd be surprised what a 3 or 4 year old can do. You know, they come here knowing. They come here being prepared. So, but as we are changing, as things are changing, we want them to, you know, feel comfortable in the change, as much as comfort as we can give them. Not too comfortable, because when they get too comfortable, then they get complacent.
Yeah.
So we want them to be aware enough where they can see what's going on and understand that even though this is an uncomfortable time, that does not mean that you must stay in this area, because time is our best friend. We don't want to make it our worst enemy.
Right.
You know, when time says to let it go, we have to let it go emotionally, mentally, spiritually, even physically. We have to move on, and we should teach our children the same way. I believe time and frequency is everything. You know, like, for example, a person can stay angry, okay?
For years.
And that's what you, for years and years, but the anger turns into other things.
Yeah, it physical
gets
in the
sickness. As, exactly. So if you...
Cancer.
If you see your children, see that you're angry and you don't know how to forgive, then you're sending major, you know,
that's
damaging...
That's teaching your children. Yeah.
Damaging.
How to hold grudges.
They have to learn how to forgive, how to let go. Forgiving is to let go, take your power back, and move on, okay? It's not saying you agree with anything, nor you console it. No, it is just what it is. Time says it has to stop.
Absolutely.
That's what time says.
Absolutely.
And if you teach them that out of love, you teach them that out of devotion, you teach them that out of harmony. And, you know, this life is not a perfect life, and you expect them to understand it from a perfect point of view. This is that we call mistakes errors.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why it's an error is because that the solution or the choice you made was not for that particular situation.
Right.
It didn't fit that conflict.
Right.
So you go back to the drawing board and you ask yourself,
well,
how can this work for me?
Yeah, right.
And you got to go through several. Certain things you have to go through more than one, four or five. But you'll notice something, you know, that no matter what and how many you use, you're going to learn something from each and every error that you've had. I want to share something quickly, if I may. My youngest daughter, she's married with two children,
mm-hmm.
and she sent me some of the greatest news that just made me tear up yesterday. And she's like, Mom, I finished school, which is, you know, she graduated with her master's degree, and it was time for her to make a decision on changing positions on her job, in her career.
Mm-hmm.
And she, at first, she was a little stagnated because the way she was, you know, paying her very well, but she wanted more. And the thing about it is she was talking with some of the colleagues. They're like, well, I don't know if you can get that position because it takes more work to get that position when you change over to working for this particular company. You're going to have to start, you know, on ground level and work your way up. And she was saying, you know, she heard that and it kind of permeated in her mind, but then she remembered what I said to her. I said, all things are possible if you believe. You know, your faith is going to carry you. So she said, I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to go ahead and just submit it anyway. I'm going to go and ask for that position, even though I might have heard people that have been there for 15, whatever years. I'm going to take the chance, and I'm going to go for it. So she did, and at first she didn't get get all of the information, and it seemed like things were going the other direction. And she's like, no, I'm going to stay the course. I'm just going to wait and be patient. I'm not going to just give up and go the other direction. And so she came and she told me yesterday, she said, by my faith, I got it, Mom.
Wow.
I got the job.
Wow.
I got the job. She said,
yeah.
You know, I've learned a lot, and one thing I learned to never give up.
Right.
No matter what it looks like. So
right.
I just wanted to say
like,
that for her because I'm so happy for her that the beautiful age of 28, soon to be 29, she's at a very good place financially and teaching her children that,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you really want something, you can get it if you just put your brow to it. And I want to tell the parents, you know, encourage your children out of love, you know, and devotion. Because when you do that and when they watch you, you want them higher than you. You want them
yes.
to a point where they, like, I believe it was Coffee that said, he's like, you know, it was Coffee was saying that I want my children to teach me.
I want you to teach me something.
Right? So, you know, she taught me something that no matter what's going on, no matter how it looks, don't give up the ship.
Right.
Just stay the steady course. And that was just a wonderful thing. And I just want to spread that out today that, hey, whatever you're working on, whatever you got going on, just stay the course.
Right.
And, you know, your children are watching you.
They are. And they're encouraged when they see you persevere and get through something. So even if you're going through hard times, your children
yes.
need to see you persevere. They need to see how you handle difficulties. We make the mistake of not allowing our children to understand some things early in life, like, you know, not understanding the bills that we pay or the obligation that we have or the work we have to do. But share those things with them so they understand this is part of life, your responsibilities. And even if things are difficult, if you have to maybe cut back on certain things rather than just saying, oh, you can't have that new coat or, you know, I don't have enough money for that. You know, if you can share with them, well, this is the household budget. This is the total amount that we have to pay. And, you know, this is the electric bill. This is the gas bill. So every time, you know, you keep lights on and you're not even in the room, that's adding to the bill. So maybe we can remember to cut the lights off and when you leave
yeah.
the room and you're not in there. Or maybe, you know, cut off your stereo or your radio or cut off your computer if you're not, you know, in the house, you know. And then this is the total amount of money that we make. This is our income. So out of this, we have to decide what we're going to spend.
Yes.
If you can share those things with them and they'll think, well, you know, money is grown folks' business. Well, at what point are they going to understand budgeting and decision-making if you never share with them how much you make, how much you have to spend, what adds to the cost, and then when you go shopping, be able to show them, okay, well, if we maybe get this item that's on sale, you know, 2-for-1 or whatever, we can save some money. I mean, just teaching them little things, survival things, so even in difficult times, rather than just saying, well, you can't have that, you can't go there, you can't do that, they understand that you're making a financial decision, not a decision of, well, I don't love you enough to buy this or spend this on you. It's just this is the amount of money that we have to manage for our survival, and so these are the decisions you're going to make. And maybe you can even have, cause me and my husband and my daughter, we used to have family meetings, you know, and we divide up the chores and all of that and you know, make decisions on buying decisions and so forth so that my daughter could be a part of the family decision making and understanding this is all part of the household management. So that when she gets to the point of course she's grown now, when she gets to the point of finding that life partner that yes. that's going to share goals and be her emotional support for the rest of her time here on Earth, you know, hopefully if they are still traveling along the same path until one of them leaves here, she'll have those management skills and also have an example of how to make decisions. And even when my husband and I would argue, and my daughter always reminds me that, you know, I got this fiery temper, but we would always show her the process of conflict resolution. We would always show her the process of admitting, you know, an error, apologizing, rectifying whatever was done, so that she would know the process. It's difficult if you live in a household when parents just get mad at each other and yes. they stop speaking to each other and you don't know what happened, or you hear them screaming and shouting, maybe one of them leaves or something, you don't know what happened, and then maybe suddenly all of a sudden everything's okay again. You don't know, okay, well, how'd y'all make up? What happened? You know, or they split and you don't know, well, could you all have talked about it? I mean, like, the other's right. You have to be able to show conflict resolution, whether you stay married or choose to end the marriage. You have to show your children the process of conflict resolution so that they know how to do it. You have Absolutely. To show them how to cooperate, how to divide up the responsibilities of household management. You have to show them how do you talk about it when you're angry and upset, and how do you express, you know, disappointment. And how do you stay respectful even when you're angry at someone? You have to demonstrate that. And many times, if our parents didn't show us how to do that, we have to learn on our own. And the first thing you have to do is forgive your parents for whatever they didn't teach you, because they didn't know.
Right, right. Absolutely. So we have to go to a break. And our Facebook viewers, thank you so much for joining us. And stay right there. We'll be right back.
Right, and let me get here on our switchboard.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show, as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our hosts. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Do you or your organization need space for an event? Call the Quarry Event Center at 2423 East 75th Street in Chicago for your parties, banquets, award ceremonies, repasses, concerts, and business seminars, available 7 days a week, now under new management. Call us at the Quarry at 773-663-2557. That's 773-663-2557.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Susan Essentials doesn't do it any other way. Tucson Essentials provides your employees and individuals access to over 20,000 nutritional products, and they are shipped direct to your door. Because Tucson Essentials is certified in plant-based healing, we're permitted to offer you the best nutritional supplements on the planet. They're non-GMO and sustainably produced, and we take the guesswork out for you. Let Tucson Essentials help you take control of your health today.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Cell Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
This is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. I'm Dr. Debbie Green with my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif, executive producer. And our topic today, we're at the top of the hour, is how to prepare our children for life. And I just wanted to let you know one of our Facebook Live viewers, Joyce Sager, said, intergenerational conversation is missing, Naima, including the children in the family, life decisions. We used to have once a week family meetings to discuss, share, and demonstrate how to present their communication skills without anger, discuss concerns respectively, loving this.
Mm.
Absolutely. Don't you know that is one of the requirements that we have when I do the group therapy, is that the family have to have at least one time a week, I call it tabletop discussion.
Yes.
And when they come, they're not specifically putting the child on display. They're just going to talk about their day. Like, you know, this can be done on a Saturday at the end of the week if they choose, a Sunday or whatever. Whatever day they choose, evening, it doesn't matter. But at least once a week.
At least.
And what they're doing from what they are going to say in their conversation, they go ahead and give their rules. That's when no one can interrupt anyone when they're speaking. Everybody must be respectable at all times. And they just go around and tell what they've gotten out of their day, what has happened in their day, what good, what bad. But my day was, when I woke up this morning, I was feeling blah, blah, blah. But by the end of my day, this will happen. And I got cut off in traffic. I mean, you know, you never know what's going to happen in your day. So it's not so much, oh, well, what's going on with little Bobby or little Sue, you know. But you do it at a collaboration of thought process. And what you're going to find out is something didn't go, you know, correct in your child's day, this is the opportunity for you to know.
Yeah.
Because, you know what, I had an argument at school, you know, one of my friends said this and they did that. And then all of you got like mommy, daddy, or whoever, it could be a biological family. which is full of grandparents, my aunt, or whoever's raising the child. But then that person gets to say what has happened, and they get different views. Say, well, maybe you should have done this, or maybe you should have done that,
mm-hmm.
and help that child to understand, you know, there's other views of life to go for, instead of just leaning to their own understanding and not sharing what has happened. And I think this is a golden rule,
with
Joy, that we require, because we have what is called family sessions.
Right.
Family sessions are done before that child is discharged out of the program in the hospital.
Mm.
They have to have a family session.
I think
that family session discusses whatever pertinent issues that need to take place, as far as the environmental status or what's going on there, as well as how the child is, you know, healing, their healing process of when they're going back home and what needs to happen, and the follow-up aftercare. So that is definitely something that's needed in all homes, regardless if a child has a problem with defiance or have any developmental mental issues. It just needs to be done, because the phone separates the family.
Ooh, the phone separates the family.
It does.
Yes, when you're sitting at the dinner table and everybody's into their phone. I think Koopy mentioned something about, you know, they always sit down to dinner. You have to have at least one family meal a week, even if every other day of the week everybody's gone and on their separate ways, and you got this game and that meeting and all that. Pick a day, whether it's Sunday dinner, Saturday evening dinner, Friday evening, whatever it is, pick a day when everybody's got to sit at that table. Everybody's got to, as you said, share their day, talk, listen, and participate.
Yes.
And it's not an attack session. It's to share your feelings, share your experiences. What are you going through? You have to have that, because you have to show a child that they are a valued member of the family. And even when you're sharing your things as an adult, you know, let your children give you some advice. I mean, it's okay. I like that. Hey, what about once a week, no phone day? I think that's a good idea. Because I have friends that their teenager, their young adult, you know, their preteen will not put down that phone, and you're sitting at the dinner table and you're texting your friends. You're not participating with the family. So we have to listen to our children and teach them how to listen and participate in the family discussions. Not an interrogation. What did you do today? Why did you do that? It's listening. And so what has to happen, you know, we're kind of in a transition, because many of us were raised by parents who were raised by parents who were raised by parents whose philosophy was children are to be seen and not heard, meaning we don't want to hear your opinion. You just sit down and shut up and do as you're told.
Right.
So we have to have evolved out of that belief system to understand that everybody is valuable, and being young does not negate your right to be respected. So that's a whole different way of thinking.
Yes.
Respecting young people, respecting their thoughts, their ideas, their opinions, respecting them for their intelligence, even though they may have had less life experiences, but they're still a human being and they still matter. And their voice matters, their feelings matter, their opinions matter. They're part of a whole. They're part of a family. And being part of a family means that you're valuable. So that's a different way of thinking and even seeing and relating to children than what we may have experienced or our parents experienced. Because if you're raised by somebody who's hitting you or is screaming at you or calling you names, you're being taught, I am not worthy of respect. Uh-huh. And
that's
you carry
right.
that feeling the rest of your life. As you mentioned earlier, you end up trying to fix that and trying to please people who don't respect you because you've been taught to be disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to change the way we parent and realize that the people who raised us did the best they knew how. But each generation is supposed to evolve higher. We're supposed
Absolutely.
To, like Koopy was saying, you're supposed to be able to teach your parents something because you have evolved. You've taken what they learned, and then you've added to that. So each generation is supposed to get better and better and better. You don't keep doing the same things the same way. You look at what worked and what didn't work. certain things didn't work. They didn't produce healthy people. Being screamed at and beat and punished for everything and shamed and publicly humiliated, that didn't produce emotionally healthy adults. We see that. So rather than do the insane thing, do the same thing the same way and expecting different results, we know
right.
that way of treating people is not good. You don't treat your children as if they don't have feelings. You don't treat them as if they don't matter. You don't treat them as if what they have to say is something you don't need to listen to because you're older. You don't use physical violence to force your way. You teach them. You give them understanding. That's the way to parent. We should learn that by our own emotional scars and the emotional scars of the people who raised us and the emotional scars of the people who raised them. We should learn these things so the underlying principle of all relationships has to be respect. And when we can teach that and demonstrate that, even in a household where the adults may choose to split, if the children have been taught the principle of respecting other people, they can handle it. They may be disappointed, but they can handle it, and they will maintain respect for the parents. But if we've treated them badly, when they get older, they're going to treat us badly because you do reap what you sow. So we've
Absolutely.
Got to learn how to sow in them the principles of valuing other people by demonstrating it in our families as a practice.
Yes, it is extremely important that we help them to understand their boundaries and limits, even with ourselves. Again, you know, people interrupt life patterns of other individuals because they have not established their own boundaries and limits. Mm-hmm. And that if you parent that way, if you don't parent with boundaries and limits, then you are then teaching your child to allow life just to, you know, make decisions for you. You're not making any decisions for yourself. People are then going to, you know, pull you astray very easy because you are allowing what we allow persists. Mm. Whatever that is, if it's dysfunction, defective, hurt, pain, I mean, rejection, regardless of what it is, what we allow, it keeps persisting. Mm-hmm. So I see this often, but it was this one particular child that always was in mental pain, and mental and emotional pain. And, you know, and so we had to do some research with the families to find out, what's going on. It's like, you know, this child is in this, I would just call it like a brick house. It's like no matter what we tried to do to get in, it was just like a fortress, and the child was suicidal. So we had to run very quickly to help this child. And what we found out that the child, you know, was missing his mother. Mm-hmm. The mother passed away, and the father then reestablished another relationship, and that's where he got stuck.
Mm.
He got stuck back there. Because he was not, you know, the dad never really talked to him about losing
grief.
The mother.
That's an issue you really have to address because
but
children grieve.
That the child was okay and the child was not.
Not okay.
Just because they wasn't saying anything,
right.
He didn't say anything. He was very quiet, and they thought it was okay, but the child was grieving, and he was functionally depressed, you know, going to school, doing what he has to do. But then one thing about depression is when it becomes mild, you don't see it. Moderate, you see signs. Severe, you can't do nothing but see it because now the symptoms are extremely.
So what are some of the signs of mild and then severe depression? What behaviors might a parent look for if they didn't realize that that's really what their child is going through?
The mild is when the communication ceases.
Mm.
Okay, when the child is, if the child was once a talkative child, stops talking. Like, you know, they have days where they I call it socially isolate themselves, where they stay in their rooms, they stay really in the phone more so than outside. The outside world, like parents, they don't give them a lot of interactiveness at first. It's like they just start closing inward. Eating habits sometimes change. Sometimes they eat too much or don't eat at all. Sleeping habits the same way. The ADLs start to get irregular. Activity of daily living starts to get irregular. They're not off balance. They're just irregular. That person becomes very temperamental, which is very sensitive. And you're like, well, I don't know, they're maybe just having a bad day, you know, that type of thing. And so you stop talking to them, you leave them alone, especially if they're, you know, if they're teenagers. You don't really try to figure out what's going on with you because you don't want to get back and, you know, you don't want to go back and forth with them. So as time goes on, the mild symptoms become moderate if they have stopped affecting school. You know, then school gets involved where the child's grades start to drop. If they were making decent grades, A's or B's, they no longer are doing that. They're skipping school. They're no longer in school. They're shutting down, you know, slowly but surely. And then here we come with the severe. Severe is when if they may talk to a friend or someone, and that friend may say, you know, I'm angry. I don't know. The friend, they may be telling their friends about what's going on at home, and they may say something like, I don't understand. You know, I'm not happy at home. I don't even think I want to live there anymore. Matter of fact, I don't think I want to live. Okay? I don't have no reason to live. I feel uncomfortable. I feel, you know, I mean, if they come up with different things, and if the friend really cares, the friend will tell an adult, you know, and then that adult, and sometimes it comes through school, and sometimes it comes through, you know, outside, you know, parenting, like outside of their best friends, parents may know, some kind of way it'll come, and then that's when we, you know, they'll find out that it just is dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, this is dangerous. So, and they then take the, you know, bring the child up, get an evaluation at that point. And if they are severe, which is a plan in place, like if they clearly say, you know, oh, I want to hurt myself by whatever means, that means they have a plan. That means they thought about it. So now that anger has went and turned into other things, that sadness, that, you know, it turns into other things. And, again, our children don't always know how to cipher and figure things out because they get so emotional.
Right.
Because they're all impulse.
Right.
So once they evaluate it, and, you know, if it's a real severe case, they have to, you know, be kept in a place so they can, we can figure it out to find out exactly what's going on.
I've known some families where there was a suicide involved. It's devastating. It's devastating because it's like parents didn't see it coming. I mean, they might have seen maybe a little bit of withdrawal, but sometimes the child hides it. You know, they don't really display that they're going through sadness to their parents. But like you say, usually a friend, somebody will know that there's something wrong, and you know, when people start talking suicide, pay attention. Only all this want attention. You know, they do. They're trying to get you to talk them out of it, but if you don't, then they will go through with it. So, yeah, take it seriously.
Exactly. Joyce Sager said, dangerous place to stay isolated, that Angie is at work on its stories. Usually not good stories, right? Go on, Deborah. Negative stories stories will shut you down.
Yeah.
Absolutely, ma'am. She also has another comment. My granddaughter has experienced since her 2 years in high school four suicides,
ooh,
three of them her friends.
Oh, wow.
This evening, you queens are touching some sensitivity buttons this morning.
Wow.
And this is real. This is something we see on an everyday
And she should definitely talk to her granddaughter because, you know, suicides tend to trigger other suicides, especially when it's really close to you.
Sometimes
there's guilt, like, I should have known, I should have done something, I should have said something. So it's just devastating. You know.
And it's and unfortunately, it is on a rise because of all of the outside influences as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a group of children that, you know, they're cutters, as one would say.
Mm.
Cutters is where they self-inflict harm on their bodies with objects. And when you ask a child, you know, why are you cutting yourself? They say, because it makes me feel better. So to inflict pain upon yourself makes me feel better. So it lets out some of the pain that's inside.
Wow, that's...
I know. So this is a topic that we definitely need to bring back for a second time because I know there's a lot of questions about this topic, and there's a lot of things that, you know, we can do to save our children, you know.
Yes.
Again, our goal is to prepare them, and the only way to prepare them is to listen to them with in love and without judgment and to help them know that they can make the best decisions, not putting them down with words, actions, or behavior, but to lift them up and keep them spiritually, mentally, and emotionally grounded. I think that's extremely, extremely important.
Yes, it is. Well,
all right.
This has been definitely another great session. You know, you don't know this is therapy when I'm doing these shows with you. For me, I really need you. Probably need to send me an invoice.
Awesome. Thank you so much, everybody that joined us on Facebook Live, and also our listening viewers out there. This is Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions on the Female Solution Network Powerhouse. I'm just adding an extra word in. You know, I took that pause for peace.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I am so excited about that.
Yes. We're helping one soul at a time. That's the way you create peace. So we're going to continue this, of course. And as our Mama Joy says, that one of the things that we got to deal with is the distress that's causing suicide. Because our young people, they don't have a vision of the future. When you're young, you don't see tomorrow. You just see today. So we're going to work with that. And of course, we want you all to come on back tomorrow and join us for Health and Well-Being with Vienna right here on the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. Always so glad to be here with our dear Dr. Debbie, and we will see you all
next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya.
Afghanistan, Tashakkur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.